The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
Well, one major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
All right, good day, everybody. Welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, February 24th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm Radical Russ Belville, coming to you live and direct from beautiful Potland, Oregon. It's not a typo. It's a way of life. And joining me in our virtual studio in the very northwest tip of Oregon, the most beautiful place on the planet, Astoria, my good friend and half-half sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Hi, Russ. It's true. It's really true, everyone.
It is the most beautiful place on earth, Astoria, Oregon. Oh, we love it. And how are things going up there in the beautiful city today?
Oh, it's gorgeous. All my flowers are popping up through the rain. Getting some good weather, even though it's raining.
Yep, still raining down here in Potland, too. And we got a really busy show today. Lots of great stuff. Trying some new stuff on today's show as well. Before we get to all that, let's remind everyone that Cannabis Carrie brings us the news here from her website, CannabisFantastic.com. And what are we looking forward to for today's headlines?
Well, Russ, we're going to look at two different states who have taken a step towards legalizing medical cannabis this week, some great strides. And then, unfortunately, as sometimes happens in the news, we have a very tragic story to report out of Ohio.
Okay, well, we'll get to that right after our first break, so stay tuned, and Cannabis Carrie will have all of that coming up. Today is, of course, Irie Wednesday for our Daily Toker Tunes, and Johnny Reeferseed from Iowa will be joining us with a great song from Jacob Miller for you reggae fans, so stay tuned for that at 20 after. We always bring that for your very special break. And at the bottom of the hour, today is our Cannabis Science, and we'll be visiting with a very special guest. Dr. Mitch Earlywine couldn't be with us today, so we are going out to Boston, Massachusetts to speak with the legend, Dr. Lester Grinspoon. That's right, Dr. Lester Grinspoon, the author of Marijuana Reconsidered and one of the pioneers in medical marijuana dating back all the way to the 60s. He'll be joining us via Skype from his home in Boston, Massachusetts, answering your questions live from our chat room. So get ready at the bottom of the hour for that. And then in our second segment at 45 after the hour, we have a guest in studio, a live studio guest will be joining us, an Oregon medical marijuana patient who I met at the Cannabis Cafe, who's going to be discussing a topic that we've brought up many times here on Normal Show Live, and that is the refusal of transplant banks at hospitals and other locations to accept medical marijuana patients into their transplant list. That is, giving them a death sentence, kicking them off of the list merely because they use a doctor-recommended safe and non-toxic herb that is legal in this state. It's an amazing story. He'll be joining us right there at 45 after the hour, so stay tuned for that. You can also find us on the web. Our blog is the Normal Stash blog at stash.normal.org. And follow me on Twitter, Radical Russ on Twitter. This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. We'll be right back with your headlines and some Daily Toker tunes.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
In England, I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale, and never tried it again.
I think you'd probably be a lot cooler if you had, Mr. President.
I said, hey, do you have it going, kid? Sure would be a lot cooler if you did. Lie to don't hide it.
Industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
It seems that the race to be the 15th state to legalize medical marijuana is on, and this week South Dakota is putting their hat into the game. The group South Dakota Coalition for Compassion turned in 32,000 signatures, which is almost double the amount they need to put the issue on the ballot. The measure failed, yes, by only 4% the last time voters were faced with the option to allow access to medical marijuana in 2006. Advocates believe that they have the support that they need to pass a legislation this time. The signatures gathering this time has led them to believe that many more people are interested in allowing medical marijuana for patients. Emmett Reisthoffer with the South Dakota Coalition for Compassion said the community of medical marijuana patients is fueling the effort. Now, Dr. Tom Huber with the South Dakota State Medical Association seems to disagree, saying that the advocates are just more vocal this time around. He doesn't think they have the amount of support to pass something so controversial. As soon as only 17,000 of those 32,000 signatures on the ballot measures are valid, it will be the voters that get to decide if South Dakota will allow medical marijuana later this year.
Well, in 06, it was kind of disappointing because it was the first time that we had medical marijuana be voted down in any of these citizen initiatives with that 46%. We've also had some interesting stories in South Dakota, and you can catch up on a lot of this stuff at sodacnormal.org. That's S-O-D-A-K for South Dakota, right? Sodacnormal.org. Bob Newland is a medical marijuana activist up there and the head of South Dakota Normal. And in a most interesting case that we reported on last year, he was ordered by a judge. I think he was caught growing plants, you know, of course. And he was ordered by a judge to not have any active advocacy for marijuana law reform, right? The judge said, okay, we caught you growing plants, so you can't collect petitions, you can't tell people about medical marijuana, you can't go around helping to promote it with South Dakota Normal, you're out of luck, your free speech doesn't count anymore. And a lot of people wrote to us at the time saying, well, isn't that a constitutional violation? How can you do that? Well, judges have a lot of latitude to do a lot of things when they find you guilty, especially guilty of a felony. So Bob has, you know, stepped away and is keeping quiet on the issue, but the issue will not die. They thought they could take a guy down, thought they could take down one of the big Normal leaders there in South Dakota, and that the rest of the people wouldn't be able to keep it together, and it's been proven wrong. They've turned in twice the number of signatures that they need, and they're well on their way to establishing medical marijuana in the Great Plains.
And New York City also got one step closer to approving medical marijuana for residents when the New York State Senate Health Committee passed Senate Bill 4041B by 9 votes yesterday. This is the second consecutive year that that bill has made it out of the Senate Health Committee. This is a retooled version of Senate Bill 4041 that failed last year, but now has many more restrictions. The most glaring is the language that does not allow patients to grow the medical cannabis themselves. The Assembly's Medical Marijuana Bill, A-9016, also passed the Health Committee last month and is now sitting in the Assembly Codes Committee. A Quinnipiac University poll released earlier this month suggests that New Yorkers are ready to make New York one of the nation's medical marijuana states, with 71% in favor of medical marijuana access. Ooh. The New York State Assembly passed medical marijuana legislation in 2007 and 2008, but the issue has never gotten a Senate floor vote. For the first time in 2009, Bill 4041 passed the Senate Health Committee, but progress stalled because of the Senate leadership struggle, which lasted until just before the legislature recessed. Advocates are saying the more restrictive version of the bill is more likely to pass.
Yeah, the restrictions that keep popping up here. It's beginning to look like that we're going to get medical marijuana established in the Northeast. We've got it in New Jersey. Looks like New York's going to pass. Pennsylvania's in good shape. New Hampshire's got a bill going. Massachusetts, etc. But the problem is, it is beginning to look like East Coast marijuana is going to be no home grow. Vermont, yes, one of our people bringing that up too. But it looks like these new states coming on in the Northeast are all going with this model first saw proposed in an MPP sponsored bills that do not allow the patient to grow their own medicine or have a caregiver grow the medicine for you. And here at Normal, we're extremely it's a conflict because you don't want to have people suffering in these states that could do well by getting medical marijuana. And it's not like we're against the dispensary systems that get marijuana to the patients. There's nothing wrong with that. But the thing about medical marijuana that makes it such a wonderful thing is that it's a houseplant. You don't have to go get a pill. You don't have to go get a doctor's prescription. You don't have to be, if you're a poor person, having to make the decision between feeding your kids or buying your medicine. Right? You can grow it yourself. But all of these East Coast legislators are terrified by the members of the Fraternal Order of Police and the Narcotics Officers Associations, etc., who come into the state houses in uniform with their weapons on their hips, talking about how California is so Wild West. It's out of control in California. There's crime in the streets. Cats and dogs living together. Disasters of biblical proportions. When the reality is, they legalized marijuana with Prop 215 for medical patients, and nothing bad happened. Nothing bad happened. The rates of use among teens dropped. We didn't have mass marijuana overdoses in the streets because, oh yeah, you can't overdose from marijuana. So I always turn to these people, what's wrong with California? The Californians seem to like it okay. The people that are frequenting the dispensaries like them, and the neighborhoods where most of these dispensaries are, by and large, are improved by the dispensaries being in those locations. It's kind of ironic, though, don't you think, that these East Coast people are being terrified by the notion of California-style medical marijuana, but they want to eliminate home grow? They're always claiming that it's the dispensaries that bring all the crime and all the problems, but they want to have dispensaries and not have people growing their own at home. It's always very, very confusing to me, and I'm very, very frightened of this model becoming more and more established, this idea that medical marijuana is so deadly dangerous, so terribly frightening to the children and all, that we've got to keep it locked up in pharmacies, people can't grow their own, and the desperately sick and disabled have to spend lots of money out of pocket for overpriced marijuana.
And we turn to Ohio for a tragic story. A Rootstown, Ohio man took his own life on Tuesday after he and his wife were charged with child endangerment in connection with growing marijuana in his home. Robert and Pamela Batch were arrested on Monday on warrants of allowing a juvenile to live in the home where marijuana was being grown. The couple has owned the well-kept 100-year-old home since 1991. Their son told school officials about the marijuana growing in their home, and that led to an investigation. According to the police, once Mr. Batch heard that his son had told school officials about his plants, he got rid of everything. Sheriff David Doak of the Portage County Sheriff's Department said there was no marijuana present when they arrived to arrest the couple. They were released on Monday after 5 p.m. after posting a 10% of a $5,000 bond, and both were scheduled for preliminary hearings on Friday before a judge. Pamela Batch found her husband's body with a .22 caliber rifle nearby in the woods behind their home Tuesday afternoon. A spokesman for the county coroner in Portage, where Ritztown, Ohio, is located, said that the death of Robert Batch would be declared a suicide.
Well, yeah, tragic story here. And, you know, we're often fond of saying that marijuana doesn't kill anybody, but marijuana prohibition sure does. You know, I remember as a kid, you know, talking to my grandfather, and he was a vet in World War II, and I talked to my grandmother a lot, too, about, you know, what it was like back during World War II times and their vision of who they were fighting, right? You know, because World War II seems to be that iconic American war. And I always remember them telling me stories about the awful things about the Germans, that the Germans were just so awful because they would have their citizens spy on each other. And they'd have the Hitler Youth, where children were indoctrinated to inform on their parents if they were hiding Jews. And I don't want to violate Godwin's law or anything here yet, but it seems like a striking parallel to me when we have a country where we're encouraging our children to turn in their parents for gardening in their basement. For gardening in their basement. Turn them in because, for some reason, kids and houseplants is endangering a juvenile, right? It's just terribly dangerous being around all those marijuana plants because, you know, they might, I don't know, smell them or see them somehow. Because even if the kid were to, let's say, break off a bud and eat it, it's not going to kill him. You can't overdose from marijuana. It might be a bad trip, and I wouldn't encourage it. But he's not going to die. It's not endangerment. And a lot of times when I talk this point, people will argue, well, but if he's got marijuana plants in his house, he's putting his family and his kids at risk of a home invasion robbery. They could come break in and do terrible things. Yes, that's true. But that's not marijuana endangering the child. Once again, that's marijuana prohibition endangering the child. Nobody's kid is endangered because they have a liquor cabinet. As long as they got that liquor locked up and kept out of the way where the kids can't get at it, it's not like we have home invasion robberies of people breaking in to steal the Bacardi out of your liquor cabinet. We don't have that sort of problem with cigars or cigarettes, right? No home invasion robberies there. We're not putting kids in danger there. Well, we are if we're smoking in the house and the tobacco and they got the secondhand smoke on the kids, but that's a whole nother argument. And a lot of people might turn to this story, too, and say, well, he took it out on himself. He killed himself. It was a coward's way out. You know, he could have faced the charges. But what's going to happen to this guy when he faces the charges? He's going to go to prison. He's 55, did you say? 50-something? Mid-50s? He's going to go to prison for years and years and years, not see his kids grow up. And who knows what other you know, things are motivating him here in his life, you know? We don't have a full story on where he came from. But once again, a situation where this guy had probably been growing for a long, long time and never been a problem to anyone. Seems like his kid's grown up okay. Seems like he's got a good family. But in our zeal to eradicate a plant species, because we just can't have people being euphoric and enjoying themselves, we pressure this man to take his own life, 55, take his own life over marijuana. So I want people to think about that. I want people to think about how marijuana prohibition is killing people. And that's why we're here at Normal, trying to end this stupid marijuana prohibition. All right, folks, sorry to bring everyone down, but, you know, this is part of the war on drugs, and we got to face it, and we've got to, you know, own up to it and figure out how we're going to make a change. But let's bring the mood back up a little bit. Our next guest coming up, we're going to have some Irie music for you. We'll get a little bit Irie here and stop thinking about Babylon, and we got to take our little break. And you know what time it is. It's just about, that's right, just about 20 after the hour. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with your Irie Wednesday Daily Toker Tunes. Check us out at stash.normal.org for more.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send to South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well-trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Our marijuana laws are terribly unfair, and they make criminals out of law-abiding citizens. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges, and we are unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They are average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. And it's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. Brought to you by Johnny Reaverseed and the High Rollers, America's favorite red-eyed soul rock and roll band, available now on iTunes and CD Baby. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tune. All right, Irie Wednesday. We love it when we get here to Hemp Day Hump Day. We get a little bit of reggae-infused music, and we go to the Midwest, right to the center of the country in beautiful Iowa. Our good friend Johnny Reaverseed from Johnny Reaverseed and the High Rollers. How you doing, Johnny?
Good. How you doing, Russ?
Oh, so far so good. Are you guys still buried out there?
No, actually this week the weather's been beautiful. No snow yet. So.
Oh, good to hear it. Good to hear
it.
Well, tell us about the tune we're about to hear.
Yeah. It's called. I don't know what it means.
I don't either. That's what I wanted you to tell.
It's called, Tired Feet Lick Weed in a Bush by Jacob Miller.
Wait a minute. Tired?
Jacob Miller was born in Mandeville, Jamaica on May 4th, 1955. He was one of reggae's brightest stars, who many considered a rival to Bob Marley as the music's king. While pursuing a prolific solo career, he became the lead singer for reggae group Inner Circle, with whom he recorded until his death. Jacob Miller covered a lot of ground in his 25 years. The Chucky vocalist was as versatile as they come. He was adept at being rootsy, tongue-in-cheek, or soulful with his rich, vibrant, expansive tenor voice. On stage, his energetic mood defied his heavyweight frame. On Sunday, March 23, 1980, Miller was killed at the age of 25 in a car accident on Hope Road in Kingston, Jamaica. This abruptly cut short a promising career that had already taken young Jacob Miller from Jamaica to an international record deal with Island Records. Jacob Miller's timeless sounds live on through the reissue market, Over 15 albums of his solo work with Inner Circle have been released in North America, Europe, and Japan in the past 20 years. You can learn more about Jacob Miller at jamaicansmusic.com/artists/210-Jacob, J-A-C-O-B, /miller.html. So let's remember Jacob Miller and light a spliff to Tired Fee Lick Weed in a Bush.
Tired Fee Lick Weed in a Bush by Jacob Miller. Thank you, Johnny Reaper Seed. We'll talk to you next week.
We want to come out in the open, with the breeze can blow it so far away, to the north, to the south, to the east and to the west, to the west. Talking about Jonestown, Trenchtown, concrete jungle too, from Waterhouse, that's the west. That's the best. That's the best. From St. John's, it comes to you. The best golly weed you ever drew. So why should you run and hide? From the red seam, the blue seam, the coffee close to. I feel liquid in a bush. We want to come out in the open, where the breeze can blow it so far away, to the north, to the south, to the east and to the west, to the west.
In a Bush. That's Jacob Miller for our Irie Wednesday. Thank you there, Johnny Reefer Seed, for that tune.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
Oh, we've got a little bit of time here for our cannabis community calendar, which you'll find at norml.org/calendar. Tonight, there's a screening of Busted at the New Hampshire Normal, at University of New Hampshire Normal. Screening of Busted at the MUB 2. There's a general meeting for CSU Fresno Normal tonight at the Family Food and Science Building. And it's Weed Wednesday for Kansas City Normal. They'll be on KKFI-FM. Check out kcnormal.org for details. On Thursday, University of New Hampshire Normal is having a meeting at MUB 334. And on Friday, Pittsburgh Normal is having a fundraiser in support of House Bill 1393 to get medical marijuana in the Keystone State. For more information, check out pittsburghnormal.org.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany. Now, open wide and say, here's your dose of cannabis science.
Have a wonderful...
All right, welcome to our dose of cannabis science. Now, today, Dr. Mitch Earlywine can't join us. He's got a previous commitment. But joining us today, first time on this show, but a good friend to Normal and the movement in general, the pioneering Dr. Lester Grinspoon is on the line. Dr. Grinspoon, welcome to our show.
Well, thank you, Russ. It's a pleasure to be on. I even went up and put a fresh shirt on because I thought it was going to be on Skype.
Yeah, we're still having problems getting the video feed working, but I'm sure folks will be glad to hear from you anyway. Folks, if you don't know, Dr. Grinspoon is one of the pioneers in medical marijuana. He's been at this since the 60s, and he's been at every major turning point in medical marijuana throughout history. So, Dr. Grinspoon, I'd like to open up, before we start taking questions from the audience, with your vision of where we're headed with medical marijuana. What is the future of medical marijuana in your view?
Well, you know, Russ, that's changed so much since I began studying this in 1967. In 71, I published Marijuana Reconsidered, which had a chapter on the medical uses in Western medicine, which began in the mid-19th century and were gradually... came to a close in practical terms when two things happened. When aspirin was synthesized in 1900 and the first of the barbiturates in 1898. Now, the reason this was important was because the major reason that people, doctors prescribed tincture of indica or Tilden solution or whatever the brand name was, they prescribed it largely for two reasons. One, as an hypnotic, that is a substance that would help one to go to sleep, like we use various sleeping pills now. And along comes barbiturate, the first of those sleeping pills, and at the same time, or 2 years later, aspirin was synthesized, and that was, but the barbiturates, but both of them were synthesized within 1898-1900. So now we had a pill form of a hypnotic, much easier to deal with than giving certain number of minims, and you didn't really know the dose because, one, there was no bioassay at that time, so you couldn't measure it, and two, it was given orally, and you couldn't tell until an hour and a half or two had passed.
Right, and we
had a nice pill to give for pain, namely aspirin. So it can't be said that the Marijuana Tax Act ended it completely, because doctors were losing their interest in it because of these synthetics for the first four decades of the 20th century. And then the final death knell to medicinal cannabis came with the passage of the Marijuana Tax Act in 1937, which did not rule it out as a medicine, but made it so difficult for doctors to make use of it, that is the paperwork and so forth, that they obviously went to the much more easily dealt with barbiturates. Mm-hmm. And marijuana or cannabis fell out of the U.S. pharmacopoeia 4 years later in 1941. Now, when I started this, I felt, hey, all we really have to do is get the government to move it from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2. Schedule 1's one of the criteria says there is no medical use for marijuana, which the U.S. government maintains to this day. Schedule 2 drops that criterion, so that if it were in Schedule II, and there are many Schedule II drugs which are prescribed. So I thought, we move to Schedule II, two things can happen. We can do the kind of clinical research we need to know and not be so completely dependent on anecdotal evidence. And two, it would be possible for doctors to prescribe it. But I've come a long way in my thinking since then, and I no longer believe that this is the solution to the problem.
Oh.
Because if you imagine for a moment that it were a Schedule II drug, it would be something that people other than patients would be interested in, because after all, in addition to medicine, there are two other broad categories of usefulness of medicine. One of them is recreational, which some of you may know about, and the other is enhancement, the capacity of cannabis to enhance certain kinds of human experiences, anywhere from taste and sex to viewing, to graphic arts, to developing and working on ideas. It's a remarkable drug in that way, and I've devoted a whole website, www.marijuana-uses.com, for any of you who may be interested in that. But I believe that if the government tried to make this a drug, it would have to, first of all, establish through the FDA its efficacy and its safety. To do this would require an enormous amount of money, which the drug companies are not going to put up, because it would cost $200 to $800 million to do this, and then they don't have a patent. I mean, how can you patent a plant? Anybody can grow this stuff. So it just won't be done that way.
Right.
That would mean that the government would have to supply or contract for it, and there'd be a huge demand for it. Would we have a would it be grown in fields that are surrounded by electrified fences and patrolled by guards and so forth? How would it be dispensed? Would we have to have refrigeration devices in pharmacies? What about the price? If the price of the government sold distributed marijuana were too high, then people would go to the street. If it were too low, everybody would go to their doctor and have a sore back or something to get a prescription for it. Well, I won't go into all the problems, but you could imagine what they will be. So more and more, and you know, it's very exciting now that 14 states, and that's not going to end there. Some people think New York is about to knock on the door, too, and other states have now either passed initiatives, starting with California, or legislation making it possible for people to use it. Unfortunately, for many of these states, and I think because they've seen what happened in California, where people can go to a doctor and get a card, with very, you know, minimal evidence of a serious medical problem that that marijuana can address. So, you know, really, and in Colorado, too, it's really sort of available in these states to anybody who's determined to use it for any reason. And I think that's going to be, you know, on the other hand, if you take a state like New Jersey, which makes it, you know, you have to be practically on death's doorstep before you can use it. I would imagine only a fraction of the people, the legitimate cannabis patients who have a need for this drug, are able to get it because their rules are so restrictive. Now, I think that given the fact that marijuana is probably the least toxic, or one of the least toxic substances, psychopharmacological toxic substances that we know about, and that plus its versatility as a medicine. It can be helpful in so many different medical situations. I believe that it's going to have to be treated as a, you know, in the same way that an over-the-counter OTC drug like aspirin is treated. I mean, aspirin is treated that way because it's a very safe drug. You can go in and buy aspirin at your drugstore without any permission from a doctor or any other agency, and you're allowed to use it. It's considered that you have the good sense to know how to use it or to read directions, and you're on your own. And that's true of so many. That's true of all OTC drugs.
Right.
Well, you know, if we stick with aspirin, you know, aspirin causes between 1,000 and 2,000 deaths in this country alone. Sure, it's a harmless drug, but harmless is a relative term.
Right.
Marijuana, on the other hand, has never caused a death. Why shouldn't it be, at the very least, an over-the-counter drug? Now, if it's over-the-counter, it might just as well be, you know, available. It might just as well be free of the prohibition, so that anybody can use it as a medicine when he or she needs it, and anybody can use it for any other purpose. It's a remarkable drug. You know, I, as a psychiatrist, was very conservative about drugs. I would never prescribe a commercial drug until it had been on the market for at least 1 year. I wanted it to be tested in the laboratory of the public domain. For example, a new antidepressant would come along. Everybody, even patients here, about it, they come and put pressure. And I will say, no, I want to wait. And I knew the date that the thing is. I want to wait for a year. And then if it seems like a good thing, then we'll do that. And I think that that this drug should be free of the prohibition, that that's the best way to make it available to everybody who needs it as a medicine.
I agree.
And people who want to use it for whatever reason they want to. Now, I'm trying to make it brief because I know we don't have much time.
No, that's great. That's great. We appreciate all your wisdom on this. I just want to make sure that we can get to some of the folks' questions that are out there. We've got one from a regular listener here, Yellowwanna Cake. That's the handle. They all have funny little names they go by. But the question here, a pretty advanced question. Does the regular use of cannabis slow down neural processes enough to interfere with EMDR and LI therapy for post-traumatic stress and anxiety? I guess it would be a general question on cannabis and PTSD.
Well, what did he say? LMDR?
Yeah, EMDR. And LI therapy, and I'm not sure what those are.
Yeah. Oh, that's the treatment for the people. Some people believe in moving, having the eyes move in certain ways. Do I have it right?
Yeah, I think so. I'm looking at the chat room here to see if the question asker can elaborate a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, I have no idea. I never had any experience with that kind of treatment. And we did a review when I was editor of the Harvard Mental Health Letter and felt that the treatment didn't have a lot to offer. But I know that's contentious, and I think the reader or the listener, by asking that question, thinks it is useful. Mm-hmm. As for the other initials, I don't know what that means.
I just got the note here. It's a lifespan integration is the LI, and the EMDR is the eye movement thing that you were thinking it was.
Yeah. Well, I addressed the first one. I have no idea what the second one is.
Okay.
So I can't answer.
Well, I'll tell you, Yellowwanna Cake, send me an email with a more detailed question. I'll get it forwarded on to Dr. Grinspoon and Dr. Earlywine, and we can figure out an answer for you. Let's go to the next question here from Irish MC, asking about CBDs and THC and wondering why, when he uses his vaporizer, does he feel the THC but not really feel the CBD?
Why, when someone uses a vaporizer, it doesn't vaporize cannabidiol.
Yeah, is that an issue with vaporization that the different cannabinoids vaporize at different temperatures, or should they all vaporize at pretty much the same temperature?
Well, I don't know that much about the temperature at which a particular cannabinoid comes off, but I think it makes sense that as long as you're in that window, and what I like to do is to go right to the top of the window, because presumably if you go to the top of the window, that is just before the ignition point.
Yeah.
Of whatever it is you're vaporizing, presumably you've gone through the temperature at which any one of the cannabinoids will vaporize.
Right. That's what I would
think, too. So I would imagine that whatever the... I mean, it's true that many strains don't have much of the cannabidiol, but I think people like Fred Gardner and other people out on the West Coast, and I'm sure around the world, now that people are coming to appreciate that cannabidiol is something that that we want to learn more about, and we believe has some very salutary effects.
Yeah.
I believe that we will see strains with much more of it. Now, I have no reason to believe it doesn't come off in a vaporizer.
Yeah, okay. We're speaking with Dr. Lester Grinspoon, Harvard Emeritus, and the author of Marijuana Reconsidered, among many, many pieces that you've authored in medical marijuana and marijuana in general. And I just want to give folks a show note here that we're going to go long with today's show, because I like talking to Dr. Grinspoon, and it's my show, and I can make it as long as I want. So, let's go to another question here. We have a...
we're going to break for dinner, Russ.
we'll break for dinner, exactly. We've got a question here from Seed to Smoke, and he had read your comments in the April High Times issue with regard to Rick Simpson and the so-called miracle hemp oil that he claims can cure cancer. I was wondering if you'd give us your thoughts on that, and maybe, you know, reprise a little bit of your remarks from the magazine.
Well, I wrote that piece after Steve Hager sent me the piece. He did a 5-page piece on Rick Simpson. I had never heard of him before, but it really made the alarm bells go off in me, because please understand, I am very liberal about recommending cannabis to people, because I think, you know, for example, people will, you know, my book Marijuana, the Forbidden Medicine, has been translated into 14 languages, and I get emails from all over the world, people asking me, among other things, do I think it would be useful in this or that condition. Now, I think that it is safe to say to them, you know, if I have any inkling that it might be useful, if there's a chance that it might be useful, I would say to them, I say, look, I can't say for sure that it will be useful to you in symptomatically treating this symptom, but I can tell you, if you use it correctly, that is, you have to have someone, if you don't have any experience with marijuana, you have to have somebody who does help you to do it in a way that you don't get all anxious and paranoid because you smoke too much, because you haven't learned how to do it. In fact, I tell older people who don't have people around to use it, I tell them to take one puff and then not take another one for 2 or 3 minutes, let the joint go out, and then take another puff, and just keep doing this every couple of minutes until one of two things happen. They get anxious, or they get relief of the nausea, or the diarrhea, or whatever it is that they're trying to deal with. They should quit at that point. In other words, I say to them, look, you know, it may be something to what you say. Maybe it does help. Try it. You're not going to hurt yourself. You will not harm yourself, providing you use it correctly. And that really means getting some experience with it. Now, when it comes to what Rick Simpson is pushing there, I have a real problem because, you see, we don't know how these people have come by the diagnosis of cancer. Have they all had histopathological studies, clinical laboratory studies, x-ray studies of one type or another, a physical exam, all the things that are required to go into to make a secure diagnosis of any one of the cancers. They may not have it, but even if they do, and they say, and they think, oh, well, I'm not going to go in and get radiation for my prostatic cancer and take those drugs, which it turned me into a eunuch in effect. I'm going to take this hemp oil because it will cure my cancer. And they, and if they do that, they run the risk of missing the opportunity to get a treatment which offers them, if not a cure, at least years of living with the cancer. So it isn't like, I would never say that. I would never say, oh, well, try it to a person who has a cancer, there's a bona fide diagnosis or not. And furthermore, Rick Simpson doesn't have any follow-up data that he can give us. He says he's used it, I think, in that article, and 70 people were cured. But where's the data? Just to say, you know, someone maybe 3 months later can write to him or say, I'm cured. Well, if he really had a cancer in the first place, 3 months' time may not be enough to tell whether it's going to metastasize or whether it has metastasized or not. Mm-hmm. So I think that is fraught with danger. I am reminded that when I was doing cancer research very early in my medical career in 1956, I was asked by the American Cancer Society to help with the TV program on a fellow by the name of Harry Hoxie, who operates in Texas. His granddaddy had a horse that he said developed a tumor in his right a leg, and he ate a certain kind of herb, the horse did, and the tumor disappeared. Well, it was a swelling, but disappeared. And since, and Hoxie himself was selling this this herb for $400. Now, in 1957, that was a lot of money, especially for people in the Southern California, Texas, that area, who were not very sophisticated, not well healed. They'd go to Texas and get the cure for $400 and then come back and just, I'm cured. Mm-hmm. Well, I, with Professor Ian McDonald at the University of Southern California School of Medicine, after visiting two of these women who let me examine them, who had cervical cancer, and discovered they still had cervical cancer, I said, let me do a biopsy and we'll prove it to you. They did. We paid for it, of course. And then when I proved to them that they still had cancer and they better get it operated on or they're going to have big trouble, they agreed to. We paid for the surgery. And they were fine afterwards. Now, think about it. If I hadn't happened to, I contacted a lot of people who have been cured, but these were the two people who had a cancer that was easily, you know, accessible, who let me in the door, so to speak. Think of all of those who didn't. I dread to think of them. Mm-hmm. And similarly, I think Rick Simpson, here's a man with a ninth grade education who's going around talking about something quite as sophisticated as the treatment of cancer, something we've devoted countless millions of dollars to, and we've come a little ways with it. That is, we can usually slow things down a bit and occasionally get a cure. But here this man comes along and says, I've got this stuff called hemp oil, and it'll cure your cancer. Well, you know, just like Bob Marley, who went to Switzerland, I believe it was, to get a cure for cancer, which was obviously a quack cure, you know, he didn't survive that. That is to say, the people get panicky and they will buy something that isn't worth buying and, in fact, can do, not that Simpson sells it. I don't think he's in it for the money, or at least not at this, I don't believe, but who will undergo that kind of treatment and then to discover later on that it was just a pipe dream. I wrote that article, I think I called it a word of caution, because I don't want any more people like those two women with cervical cancer to get involved with something like hemp oil. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm prepared to believe that eventually, I mean, the work of Guzman in Spain and others has demonstrated that some cancer cells seem to shrink when exposed to cannabis, but that's a long way from a cure. But I am prepared to believe that eventually, you know, that something coming out of the cannabinoids might eventually actually have curative properties.
Okay.
And but at this time, I am certainly not aware of one single case that can be verified as being a cure. Now, again, cannabis is useful in the treatment of cancer. I went into that in my book, but that's the symptomatic treatment. Nobody
right.
claimed, I never claimed, that it would cure anybody of cancer,
right.
And I don't believe anybody can legitimately make that claim now.
Okay. Well, let me get to a couple of quick questions here, and then we'll wrap it up. Just real simple, easy ones here.
Mean you want quick answers?
Well, let me just give you this one. Mr. Spoff wants to know if you were aware that there was a marijuana strain named after you.
Yes, I am. And my son, who's on the European Space Committee, he's one of two Americans. was in a meeting in London, and he flew over for the night, took a night off from the meeting, and met Derry, the owner of Barney's, and he tried it out there, and he thought it was great.
Nice.
I've not had an opportunity to use it because it's not in this country, as far as I can tell, or at least nobody's offered to help me out with that.
Well, listeners out there, if you happen to run into Dr. Grinspoon and you have some Dr. Grinspoon, well, you can work it out.
Be sure to introduce us.
All right, one last question here to wrap up the show. I had a few people asking variations of this question, and that is, does regular cannabis use have any effect on blood sugar levels or any help in treating type 2 diabetes?
Well, as a type 2 diabetic on insulin, I've not noticed that it has any effect whatsoever, either good or bad.
Okay.
So I think one can coast on that.
Okay. Well, Dr. Lester Grinspoon...
No,
go ahead, sir.
Nor have I read of anybody... I'm sorry, Russ. I just want to be sure it isn't just a... I'm just talking ex cathedra here. I don't believe that I haven't heard anything... to the effect that it influences blood sugar, except indirectly. You get the munchies, you may eat things you shouldn't or too much.
There we go. All right. Well, Dr. Lester Grinspoon, Harvard Emeritus, author of Understanding Marijuana and so many of the seminal works in medical marijuana understanding in this country, we appreciate you joining us here for our Cannabis Science segment and filling in for Dr. Earlywine. And everyone in the chat room loves you. We thank you so much for being here.
Well, it's a real pleasure, Russ, and nice to chat with you again.
All right. Will you? 58 after the hour, running long today, but that's okay. It's my show. We can do it any way I like. We're going to come back. We've got a conversation.
Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back after a word from these 420 friendly sponsors. Wait a minute. This is internet radio. There are no dials here.
As I was saying, when we come back, we're going to have a cannabis conversation on the topic of medical marijuana and organ transplants. Stick around. This is Normal Show Live.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
Here's a kite, everybody.
This drug in front of me is what they call marijuana.
If we had a dime for every dime bag bought in America, marijuana would be legal by now. Donate to Normal at NORML.org and support Normal Show Live.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that intersect nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement and prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Cannabis Conversations.
All right, top of the hour here for a Cannabis Conversation. Joining me in studio, my first in-studio guest, Mr. Anonymous, which, you know, one of our chatters said, hey, you're on camera, how anonymous can you be? But that's okay. Mr. Anonymous joins us here. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how's it going?
It is very good so far, and we just wanted to talk a little bit about your story, which is a story we've heard from many other medical marijuana patients, and that has to do with organ transplants. And can you tell folks your scenario and what's happening and how your medical marijuana use has affected this scenario?
Well, I've been using medical marijuana for about a year now, related mostly to anxiety, trepidation, and hopelessness related to dialysis. And, you know, I knew it was always going to be an issue. And I was prepared for it. But, you know, on the other hand, I didn't want to put myself out of getting a kidney transplant and improving my life. But on the other hand, I felt I couldn't live without something to help my symptomatic pain.
Right.
And, you know, I went through my doctor and I asked him, and he had me try out Marinol first, and Marinol just made me sick. And as a side note, I kept filling that Marinol, and transplant knew about that and knew that I was on Marinol and obviously got a dirty UA from me.
Right.
At first they tried to get me to go to rehab.
Oh yes.
6 months of,
6 months of rehab. Okay.
Until they finally agreed that I couldn't be smoking marijuana. I'm losing weight. I'm looking good, you know, and because of their bigotry and, you know, towards marijuana, they thought, he doesn't look like a pothead, he must not be a pothead.
Oh my God. So because you weren't, you know, watching Cheech and Chong movies and growing your hair long and, you know, wearing tie-dye every day, then, okay, you can go ahead and have a dirty UA. But if you look different, if you had dreadlocks, it'd be all over.
Exactly. And, you know, I came in the first time to meet these transplant people. I came in a wheelchair. I couldn't walk. I had long hair. I had a big, long beard. When I came in about a month ago for a follow-up meeting, I was about 65 pounds lighter, short hair, had a nice shirt on. I looked like Russ over here.
Oh, no.
I was dressed nice, and I looked good. And, that, you know, honestly, I put up a smoke screen, and they fell for it.
They fell for it. Yeah. This is a story that we've heard before. You know, we've told the story of Tim Guerin up in Seattle, the musician who needed a liver transplant. They did the same thing to him. They said, you need to go to rehab for 60 days. He had like 2 weeks to live.
Yeah. At first, they told him 6 months, and he renegotiated that to 60 days. He died a week later.
Right.
And I mean, he went to two different hospitals. I've done the same thing. I've gone to multiple hospitals and been told the same thing.
Yeah.
And frankly, it's BS, and I'm lucky to be able to have gotten through it.
Yeah.
And I still tread lightly wherever I go, and I'm very secretive about it.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, as soon as I get my priorities in order, as soon as I get my transplant and get my life together, there's no reason for me to hide this.
Right.
And there's no reason for me to not dedicate my life to Normal, because Normal, in the last 2 months of my life, I cannot express how much they've changed it with the Cannabis Cafe, with meeting people that, you know, I idolized from afar, and now dealing with these people on a daily basis and then helping me out. Dialysis is a tough life, and it becomes a full-time job, a job you really, really hate.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a social life before Normal and before meeting these people, and honestly, I didn't know they existed 8 months ago. And to find people who are like-minded like me and, you know, your listeners here, it's amazing to be able to connect with these people and all the resources that are available.
Yeah.
And of course, living in Portland, Oregon doesn't hurt.
We are blessed here, that's for sure.
Yes.
We are speaking with Mr. Anonymous. He's an Oregon medical marijuana patient who's facing difficulties because he needs a kidney transplant, but transplant people aren't so understanding about medical marijuana. Let's talk about your use of medical marijuana. Give me the picture before and after. I mean, what was life like before medical marijuana?
Before medical marijuana, I was on a lot of blood pressure medications that made me constantly sleepy. Since starting vaporization about 6 months ago, I'm off all those blood pressure medications.
Wow.
And my blood pressure has been in check, which has been a huge weight off my shoulders. But the biggest thing is, you know, walking into dialysis. Dialysis isn't a happy place. It's a lot of old dying people, and I'm a young man, and it's a hard place to be sometimes. And walking to dialysis, walking into that building before I had medical marijuana, it was tough to fight back the tears.
Yeah.
And now I go in there with a kind of lackadaisical attitude towards it. You know, I just get to sit here and I get to watch TV for 8 hours, you know, or I get to sleep. And generally I fall asleep pretty quick.
How often do you have to do this?
I do it 3 times a week.
Yeah.
For 8 hours each time.
Wow. Yeah. Full-time job, at least by Walmart standards.
Yeah, that's a full-time job.
You know, I wanted to look at another story here, and we had talked about this at the cafe, but it really shocked me because we've covered this side of medical marijuana patients being kicked off the list to get a transplant, but you've got a story about someone who was going to be giving an organ for transplant. Tell the folks about that.
Right. This was actually well before my experience with medical marijuana, but when I was a young teenager, actually, I got called for a kidney transplant. And, if you don't live in the city where you're getting transplanted, it's a quick drive. You got to drive up really fast. And I was called about halfway into my trip and told that the person tested positive for drugs, and later found out that it was a kid, 17-year-old kid, being chased by the police, and he jumped off of a garage park, a parking garage.
Parking garage, yeah.
And he got some pretty severe brain damage, and he was never going to come out of it. He tested positive for what they told me was drugs. I mean, how many 17-year-olds are using heroin and using cocaine? I'm fairly certain he was using cannabis. Mm-hmm. And I know that this happens. When you sign the back of your license to say you want to be an organ donor, that doesn't matter. If you've smoked a joint in the last month, they're going to throw your organs away.
Yeah. We've got so many people here that are, you know, dying, literally dying, waiting for livers or kidneys or hearts or lungs, eyes, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to take these perfectly good organs, which we know that THC, cannabis, cannabinoids, are non-toxic to organs. So there's no harm from the organ, right? And we're going to throw them away. we're going to throw those organs away because someone tested positive for THC. And of course, even when the kid died, like you say, it could have been within a month that he'd smoked a joint, and mm-hmm. it's possible that he would test positive for this. So, you know, I've got this idea, you know, Madeline Martinez came up with the idea, and I agree with it, and I've talked to a few people about this, of forming a cannabis union here, a cannabis users bank, where, okay, if they test positive for THC, by God, give it to the medical marijuana patient.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
It makes no sense for us to be denying these life-saving organs to people just because they turn up positive for marijuana. It's yet another reason why this stupid prohibition is killing people. It's not the marijuana that's hurting anybody. It's the prohibition on marijuana that is killing people. Let's go on here. Talking about Oregon, you mentioned the cafe and such. I see at the cafe all the time, and I've heard from some people, not our people, of course, but, you know, outside the movement, who kind of deride the idea. They put it down like, oh, well, you know, diabetics don't get together and party to do insulin or anything like that. And I always make the point that, yes, they do. You see them at football games, concerts, dances, restaurants. Diabetics can take their insulin, you know, go off in the restroom and take it, and they're fine. We don't have that outlet. No. We're forced to be, you know, shut-ins because of the medicine we choose to use. So I was wondering if you could speak to that, to the notion of the mental health aspects of going to a place like the Cannabis Cafe.
Well, I'll tell you, man, my quality of life has improved exponentially. Going to the Cannabis Cafe. And, you know, the Cannabis Cafe isn't, you know, necessarily a really beautiful place. We can't look outside. We can't look out the windows.
Right.
We can't have the door open. It's a you know, a small place that we are hidden away. And it's a private club.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't have the social outlet. The social outlet at dialysis isn't great.
No.
It's a bunch of 90-year-old men, and they don't like to talk generally.
Right.
And, for my mental health, you know, living in a, you know, I was uprooted from where I lived, moved up to Portland, didn't know anybody. And, you know, I've made all these friends in just the last month, 2 months.
Yeah.
And I can't express how helpful that's been. Because there's, even with the help of marijuana, with the help of antidepressants, you still get that really hopeless feeling. And I haven't had that in a long time.
Yeah.
And it's helped me so much. I can't express it in words. I'm literally speechless.
And we so want to spread this all around the country. I've got folks in the chat room here are mentioning how this would help folks with PTSD that don't go into crowded places anymore. We've got how many vets have you met?
Oh goodness, I've met off the top of my head maybe a dozen.
Yeah,
and people literally that. It seemed like they're just off the plane. You know, they are lots of vets in there.
Yeah.
Lots of people who are waiting to be on active duty again,
yeah.
even. And they're there every day.
Yeah.
And they need to be.
Yeah. We got a pretty regular crowd that comes down there. And, you know, so many stories to tell and so many people that are benefiting from this miracle of medical marijuana. Before we end our segment here, we're going to just wrap it up. But I did want to give you one last chance to address our audience. And you mentioned that you had a Twitter that you might give out, and we'll do that in type.
Yeah.
Rather than vocally, right after the show. So, folks, don't go anywhere after we close the show down. We'll still be in the chat, and we'll get you the Twitter feed so you can communicate with Mr. Anonymous here, who's an Oregon medical marijuana patient awaiting a kidney transplant and going through the trials and tribulations of trying to do that as a medical marijuana patient. Last word to you. What would you like to tell people?
I just want to tell people, if you can, write your local transplant office and tell them why. Ask them why they're doing this to people. I mean, Tim Guerin is a very good example of someone who died for no reason, none whatsoever. And it brings anger up inside me that I've never felt before. And I've never been passionate about anything in my life. And this is something that really gets my heart racing.
Yeah.
And I love everyone here at Normal and everyone who's helped me out, and I urge all of you to join Normal and donate to Normal if you can.
All right, do that. Normal.org, that's where you can get involved. You can start a chapter. You can send me an email at stash@normal.org. If you came in late, this show will be replayed at 3 p.m., 5 p.m., 7 p.m., and 9 p.m. Pacific time. In between, we'll give you 45 minutes of Daily Toker Tunes. I'm Radical Russ Belville. For everyone here at Normal, thank you for tuning in to Normal Show Live. Check out our blog at stash.normal.org. Follow me on Twitter at Radical Russ, and you can send me an email at stash@normal.org. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.